to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like Safari and Internet Explorer when they got turned into Web 3.0 versions of themselves. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I am your intrepid cohort, and I'm joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid cohort, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
Well, I'm, taking stock of my life.
Oh, yeah?
Taking care of some things. Being positive about the things we have, you know, so we can move forward beyond the things that we can't control.
like whether or not we get a win.
I will say, correct. I will wish you a happy season 10 first episode.
Happy season 10, Trey. I haven't heard the theme yet. I can't wait.
I haven't made it. so we'll see. But, you know what I did today? That, you know, sometimes when you're something external can get you down in the dumps, get a little upset, you're yelling profanities at watch parties. Sometimes you got to spend the next day taking care of the home yourself. So today I, for the first time since my electrical engineering merit badge in Boy Scouts, I repaired a plug for an appliance. I repaired a plug. I felt so masculine and so,
yeah, for real,
with my hands, you know, and shocked that it worked, frankly. Shocked that I didn't explode the electrics in my house.
I think shocked that it but worked is probably not the ideal result. Hopefully you won't be shocked at all.
Yeah, that's very good. yeah. So that's what I did today. I stayed off the phone and everything. I worked with my hands. I bettered my house.
And when you stood up, your wife was pregnant.
I feel much better for it. Oh, no. This is talking about good things, not bad things.
Congratulations. I'm very impressed. Me
on the plug, yes.
Spent the
yes.
whole weekend being a cultural worker. I can't imagine what such a thing is like. See, my treat myself.
That's important.
Is going to, yeah, but it's not repairing a plug. There's no merit badge for it, I'll tell you that. There's no merit badge for a searing criticism of Lionel Trilling's later work. Perhaps there should be, but that's just not the world we live in yet, Trey. I'm working every day to make it that way, to force everyone to be a armchair intellectual, an armchair public intellectual. I see my plan for relieving myself of the relieving myself of the down in the dumps feeling of watching a less than impressive home opener, yet another loss or yet another non-win to Charlotte, is going to Sojo Spa tomorrow. I'm so hyped. I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep. I haven't had this long amount of time off from having 17 things to do in about a month and a half. I'm going to be, it's like the night before Christmas over here. I'm going to be sitting
Congrats.
With my covers tucked up to my chin, just thinking about all of the relaxing nude soaks I'm going to take and the bibimbap. The overpriced bibimbap I'm going to consume over in Edgewater tomorrow morning.
That sounds great.
It does sound. Honestly, I'm so psyched.
That sounds.
I'm not being
jealous,
facetious at all. It's going to be great. And then the second half of the day, I'm going to post up in their co-working space and send a zillion emails.
My wife isn't pregnant, by the way. I'm just tracking back because I'm sure people would misinterpret your joke as some kind of reveal. It's not happening.
that we know of yet.
Shut the fuck up. Don't even speak it.
You know who else isn't pregnant?
There we go.
It's not great. NYCFC with goal scoring opportunities.
Pregnant pauses between chances, you could say.
Yeah, oh, sure. Or not as pregnant as we'd like them to be. This was a 1-0 loss in our on-the-road season opener against Charlotte FC, the Crown, the Royal Family. What an annoying name. What an annoying nickname for a very cool club. Great, great jerseys, great kits. Love the Blue Ridge Mountain imagery. But this was not a Blue Ridge victory. Alas, we went down to a really avoidable set-piece goal and never found any reason to give them something to be afraid of. And I think there's a lot to break down here, Trey, which is good because we have basically nothing else to talk about. It's the beginning of the season. No super moves, nothing that exciting or electric to cover on the podcast. But we do have some real season data for season 10 of NYCFC. What did it tell you? Give me a broad stroke summation of what we learned on Saturday night.
Broad strokes, I think it felt like it was a general opinion, shared opinion amongst the NYCFC fan base. I think perhaps with the longest offseason we've had, over 130 days, that...
of Sodom.
Perhaps we had forgotten what this team once looked like. Perhaps we had hoped 130 days would create some kind of metamorphosis within the team, having a full preseason with all the new bodies and toys we had. Perhaps spending 20 plus million in an offseason would reignite a fire. Perhaps a year older for all of our babies would create some kind of cohesion. And perhaps even away against universally considered one of the three worst teams in the league on paper, NYCFC could have pulled out a draw and then some. But no, time does not move that way. We
perhaps are stuck. For other teams, not for ours.
We literally could have told me this match was a week after our last match of the season last year, and I would have believed you. Because the general weaknesses and feelings and a lot of what we saw really fell into the same 2023 bucket to start 2024. And that is depressing. I will just briefly say there are positives, and I think it is important to keep things in context, which I'll mention when we get off of this subject. But just to talk broad strokes about what we saw, I know I'm not the only person that felt a lot of deja vu, or deja blue, one would say.
Very good.
When watching this match.
That's obviously...
What about you?
I know you watched it. That's the episode title, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think we've probably done it four times before, but we're going to do it again.
I'm not sure we... Yeah, well, we keep on having it.
Oh, you don't think we've done deja blue before? I can guarantee it. You're going to like the way you look.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. I mean, of course, how could I not? It was carbon copy. I think what you said in terms of it could have been a week ago that we were out shitting the bed, that we were out seeing a lackluster Talish Magno subbed in final minutes and failing to make anything of it. That, you know, seeing balls get skied in clutch moments, seeing two heavy touches, seeing... okay, a few beautifully threaded passes, but then, just as many clusterfucks, seeing dispossession after dispossession after dispossession, or full-on giveaway. It's not new. It feels like, or maybe, you know, there's an extent to which it's new in that it feels like a consequence of unfamiliarity rather than of malaise. But I think what did feel like it was a recurrent pattern from last year, and I hate to start negative out the gate with, but it wasn't our choice to do it, was a, kind of a confusion on the game plan. I feel like the best 20 minutes of this match were from minute 25 to minute 45. And that after that point, it didn't feel like we had much of a plan B. All of a sudden, it felt like everyone was working on it off of a different game plan. It just felt like a kind of disjointedness that reads to me like bad coaching. I don't know how else to put it, you know, or non-cohesion as a concept that has not been yet solved by coaching. If I want to be a little bit more generous or tolerant for the beginning of a full Cushing season with real assets. But it really made me, it did nothing to assuage my fears or the fears of the fan base that the gaffer's not doing, the gaffer's not gaffing, so to speak.
Well, let's go through it, right? I mean, you know, this is, we talked about time not being linear, but this game, in fact, was. And it started with 15 minutes of really wide open play. And Charlotte's, you know, seemingly had a better
parentheses
hold
derogatory.
Charlotte at least seemed to have, even under a new coach, seemed to have a better idea of how they were going to start this match. I think MRCFC had the idea. I think, you know, we heard from multiple players and the coach that working on brand new ideas and tactics in this season, and I believe we absolutely saw, you know, new approaches both in preseason and in this match as well. And I think that's probably what led to a lot of the openness in the first 15. Like, you know, we played a high line and then we turned the ball over. Boom. Okay, now what? And that's where,
yeah,
Charlotte got a lot of their chances in the first 15 was this idea of like, we're playing the way we want to play, but we didn't plan for being as turnover prone or, you know, lack of chemistry on the same pageness, which was really throughout the match. And it led to our new system that the players have been practicing and highly touting, frankly. You know, they were not ready. The famous quote, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. It feels like this team has not been tested in the ways that we were even from minute one of this match. So it led to a lot of openness. Now, I say that just to say, like, I'm not shocked. I'm okay with that. You're not going to have a brand new plan of how to play and have it work out extremely well in the first 15 minutes of the season. I get it. And it frankly didn't punish us to the extent that it could have. I think the team at least held strong to prevent any clear chances in the first moments of the match. But then you get to all those turnovers and chances given to Charlotte led to a corner. And what happened? The same thing that happened all of last year. Absolutely could not get on the same page on a set piece. And we just got smacked. You want to talk being outgaffed by a gaffer? Like, they had a clear plan for that set piece, and we were not ready for it.
Should we jump straight into your hot take, your text-based hot take?
That was very hot and in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to make it public. Can I tamper it down for the sake of the podcast?
By all means.
And, you know, after a day of working with my hands, you know, I feel
the therapy
much more. Yeah. I would say a little disappointed. It's been over a season. So it's been multiple off seasons and international breaks, et cetera, et cetera. Like, time to work on set pieces. And I'm a little disappointed that at the way that Rob Vartugian is approaching this problem. Like, I don't know what needs to change because it worked so well under him for many years. And all last year, I walk into the locker room, all of the set piece diagrams are all over the doors, just like they were in the previous years. The complication has not left it. The sophistication of how we want to defend set pieces remains, but I don't know if it's his fault, someone has to take the blame. It can't just always be the players always. Who is instructing them on these set pieces and allowing it to be to get so convoluted or confused that this happens again and again? I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I feel like it's the proof is in the pudding. You know, it's just a pattern drawn. I think you shared a graphic in the thread that was very illuminating, that that set piece defense has steadily, I think, become more and more of a problem for this team. It's obviously, it's on the scoreboard as well, but just looking at it in the raw data is, I think, a little bit more of a wake-up call. I'm sure it's a conversation that they're already having, but it's just disappointing, to say the least. And it's, exactly, it's a way to avoid getting punched in the face. In a way, I wonder if that as a flaw is going to undermine any new system that's being employed, right? If it goes to pieces because the opposition forces a corner and then delivers on it in the 10th minute, of course it's going to shake everybody's confidence. Of course it's going to shake everybody's focus. Of course you're going to get completely misfired shots because everyone all of a sudden is like, yeah, also trying to have to battle the panic. And I think that we saw a lot of that. Even in control, it felt like we were still battling panic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like first game of the season, 65,000 people there who are all cheering against you, like, and you have a young team. Like, we were not mentally there. And so on the set piece, but just to get a little more specific, you know, I think Chris Campbell's going to do something. He's a big set piece nerd, and he's going to put something out there that says it better than me, but like specifically what they did was so simple and it worked so well. Like, we've been talking for years now, the Vartugin special is like the man marking line in front to prevent runners and then the zone marking line behind to clean up any messes. So what they did was they went near post on this corner. So instantly you're limiting the amount of NYCFC defenders you have to deal with by 75%. Then you have, instead of one screener, you run two screeners. And so you screen the guy who's supposed to stop the run, then the runner comes, and then the zone guy, who was Keaton, who was going to get the ball, he gets screened too. So it's like, okay, we didn't plan for that. That it was just so simple of an execution by Charlotte. And then, like, you know, of course, notwithstanding, the cleanup effort was just, you know, no one tracked the cleanup effort either. That was lazy, but it you can't give up a two chances that close to the goal and not have something, not be an indication of something catastrophically wrong. So I mean, that's what it was. It was a very simple way to approach our set piece defense, which is very easy to look on, you know, watch all the film we have in terms of how other teams have beaten us. And then it goes down to what you say. It is instantly the problem we said over and over again last season. Again, we're in a fucking time machine. It's like, this young team cannot win if it's trailing. It especially if you're trailing from the very beginning. Because all that hard work you put in on establishing a new system and playing a high line and high pressure and working on changing areas of attack, et cetera, finding space between the lines. Well, guess what? The second between the lines, how many times did we hear Nick Cushing talk about attacking between the lines, running between the lines? Oh, Wolf is going to be great because he can work between the lines. Bakrar is great running behind the lines. Jovan can work between the lines. Okay, well, if you get scored on in the 10th minute against a team that is much less talented than yours, they're going to park the fucking bus, and that's what they did. And so you're not going to have the space. Now what? We know this team can't attack a low block. They couldn't do it last year. They're not doing it this year. And guess what? All the other release valves you get, like transition play or set pieces of our own, those don't exist. So you're left with nothing. It's impotent. We had one shot on target for the first like 80 minutes of the match.
So let's talk about all of like the offensive woes. If it's a ripple effect from the defensive woes, I think it's one of the things that I noticed was just how many times we switched the field to Tavon, like coming from the midpoint, and then struggled to find any inventive way to enter the box. Right, there was space, and then there was confusion and anxiety, or else there was possession in midfield, and then nowhere to put it. It was, as you say, a well-parked bus But even the effect, even alternatives seemed to be the same alternatives over and over again until the legs got tired, you know? Which I guess on some level, if it had worked, we'd be like cheering on because it's like, okay, great. Like persistence is key, yada, yada, yada. But is there something to the idea that because we're still in this sort of like dogmatic learn how to play the system that we're going to play this year phase, that our options, that the creativity is going to be limited in the way that we saw it be limited for a little while until that shit becomes second nature, or dare I say even works a couple times?
I'd want to say that I think it was a confluence of new pieces and new systems all trying to work together in all the wrong like places, like Micha having a majority of the time clearly is like, and this is something we pointed out in the preseason, clearly wasn't ready for this season, which is fine. Again, yeah, not all starting 11 players are going to be ready for the season, but it's pretty clear. Like the problem is you can't, is that Charlotte really identified it? I mean, they really feel like they did all their homework, which is what they needed to do to play the kind of game they did. Mm-hmm. And So what did Charlotte do? I think this game is a lot about like our offensive woes and everything kind of stem from what we were dealing with. You know, obviously getting scored on early and et cetera, but what did Charlotte do? They identified Kevin O'Toole as their pressure point, right? So anytime he got the ball, they not only pressed him hard, but they double teamed him at times, and I found that shocking. You don't see that very often, but that they were very aggressive in that way. They played a low block, right? So they could double team.
Yeah, Kevin it's O'Toole. A smart team that identifies, of all people, Kevin O'Toole, the person to throw a bunch of guys on.
True. So we were getting nothing of value going up that way, right? And so that's okay if you're NYCFC. Okay, recycle to your goalkeeper. Recycle to Martins or Risa, or, you know, moments of the match, you had James Sands dropping back between the center backs. Okay. That's a way to relieve that. You know, the White moves pawn, we moved another pawn. Then what happens? Then they started just setting up any, their midline just kept Keaton Parks behind them. That was the only thing they wanted to do. If we had James Sands playing deep, really deep, whether in the center backs or right in front of them, they just kept Keaton Parks behind them. And so what does that force you to do? They moved another pawn. We had to try to move another one. The only other move we had was try to play up this wings. So Kevin O'Toole gets behind after recycling possession. Okay, now he's stuck because obviously, you know, you're trying to work in new players. You're trying to work in a new system. You have Santi playing left wing for the first time in 8 months. You have Wolf, who's a brand new player to this team. There was a lot of congestion on that left side. Sometimes it worked beautifully. Sometimes it did not. And a lot of times we turned the ball over because people were unsure of what space they should have been taking until, as you said, the last 20 minutes of the first half. Or we had the ball. We had to relieve to Micha's side, and Micha, again, was just not ready to play in confluence with anyone that was running up that side. And that's when it just didn't work. And if we tried to play inside out with our wings, okay, it became messy. And, like, not to mention, like, Julian Fernandez, we love him, sauce-tastic, absolutely invisible in this match. And I think it was because there was a lack of commitment as to knowing when Micha would overlap and when he wouldn't and when he would underlap. And it was unclear to Micha, which became unclear to Julian, and therefore that side of the field is dead. So we frankly only had one attacking option, and that was like Santi and Wolf try to make something happen. And if you lose the ball, hope that Keaton Parks picks it up and can, you know, restart the possession. That was it. That's all we had. Because mm-hmm. Charlotte approached us in a very simple and dedicated way that became much easier after they scored. And that was it. Game over. Game, set, and match.
How did you feel about Santi and Parks in terms of their overall effect on the game? I mean, like, these were the two running plays, as they have been for a long time. Do you feel like... Do you feel like it was consistent enough to give them high marks on this match, or did the problem start there?
Well, here's the deal with NYCFC and how they're playing. Is there's a very clear, it's now extremely clear, that there needs to be some level of another option through the middle in terms of creativity. It needs to be much more dynamic in the midfield. Now, obviously, that could be throwing Andres Pereira in, but you have Keaton Parks on the field. I think he did a fine job at doing the Keaton Parks things. He's not going to be dynamic in the midfield. You need him to keep the ball moving forward and to be a release valve and to at least play semi-solid defense up front. But he's not going to give you that back and forth. So what do you got to do? Well, we started Hannes Wolf at the 10, so Santi's not there. Santi was not good at being vertically dynamic all of last season. But we need him to, and we know he can be. So I was missing that. And what you ended up with was Santi being horizontally dynamic, which was not necessarily fruitful a majority of the time. And Hannes Wolf is not, I don't know what they're teaching him, but they're not telling him to drop into the midfield at all, to drop deep, I should say, to be help, because I didn't see it very often at all. You know, a lot. I think Keaton Parks was left on an island a lot of this match. And again, deja vu. How many times did we say that in games last year? So once the ball did pass midfield, I think Santi and Keaton did a great job. I'm sorry, I should split it up, right? Out of possession, I think it was rough to watch the midfield work. But in possession, and that's a lot to do with the players that had the ball or the players around the midfield. Once they were in possession, I think Keaton and Hannes and Santi actually created some good chances in the moments of the game that we understood and could start to dissect empty spaces and man advantages. Like, we overloaded the left side all the time in that game, but when we did, we started to do so not indiscriminately, but more thoughtfully in moments of the match. That was very, very encouraging. Like, seeing Wolf understand, he saw three Charlotte defenders, but two of them were fading the goal as opposed to the end line, so he would underlap, go around Santi towards the end line, find some space there. Boom, you just gained 20 yards on the field. That's the kind of stuff I like to see. I wasn't necessarily discouraged there. It's just it became muddy because there was a lack of space. I mean, that was it. There was a lack of three dimensions in this team offensively, and we saw it. So we had shots. We had some shots. But no shots on target because all of our shots were in bad positions. They all kept getting blocked or were off target.
Mm-hmm. Why so many shots off target? I mean, like, why couldn't we capitalize on... This is a boring question. It's the same question you always ask.
I don't know if I can answer.
You know what I mean? Like, but I think both... like nobody... It's not as if we never found the ball at our feet facing goal. You know, there were the obvious mm-hmm. chances, right? Like, there was there's the shit from Santi in the first half, and I think, like, a decent Talish moment in the second. Mm-hmm. But there were others as well, right? There was, like, it wasn't, like, golden opportunities, but it was, like, somebody has to lead the charge, you know? Somebody has to say, like, I know I'm, you know, 30 yards out, but I'm in front of fucking goal, and I can put a little pepper on this fucking thing, and we're going to make a statement here. But there were either constant sort of, not even layoffs. It felt like they were, half the reason that there was so much dispossession was because it felt like part of the game plan right now is to play tiki-taka light, and it didn't pay off.
Yep. That's 100%. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. I mean, how many shitty, like, cheeky back heels that went nowhere did this team mm-hmm. attempt?
Mm-hmm.
What is the point? What are you doing? It's like they've misunderstood or misconstrued directness or intent in playing with intention as
playing with flair,
trying to play without thinking. Like instead of playing like within their own intuition, that was gone, right? Because they're in their heads, right? We from minute one, you could tell, like, there's not going to be kind of the intuitive moments are going to be few and far between in this match. Okay, well, start thinking then, because instead of they were trying to be intuitive, and you can't do that. You can't try to not try. And I think that's where a lot of those, I think you hit it right on the head. Like, all of our plays ended at the 18 because they overthought how to get into the 18. Or they tried not to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one or the other. It was simultaneous extremes. Really dull. Really, which sucks, frustrating.
There was great moments in this match. I mean, I think there was moments in this match where we had runs of play that were better than a lot of what we did, you know, especially in the middle of last year. It just came to nothing because, again, you're going against a low block. You're going against a defensively aggressive team. Like, you can't force your way through that. You have to find new ways. And this team just, I don't know, dude. At least, like, can we talk about positives now? Like, obviously,
yes,
like,
absolutely.
There's three or four players on the field that I know are beating themselves up because of how poor they played. Frankly, because how lost they looked. I already named them by name, but I'm not going to do it now just to sound extra mean. But but that's not to say, I would say a majority of the other players that didn't necessarily look lost, you know, it didn't get the job done. The players that showed up, they didn't, the execution was zero. I mean, they couldn't string two passes together. So it's just, that's why it's so frustrating, man. But yeah. The goods, positives, what do you got?
Oh, I think there's some good stuff coming from Wolf. I think there's some good stuff coming from Wolf. I think there's some good stuff coming from Mijatovic. And I think that, like, there was a relatively limited period of time where they were playing together where you could see that their lust for success, like, linked up really beautifully. It felt to me, I'm always only ever doing the emotional read on this podcast. That's my job. It felt to me, like these were two, like when they connected, these were two players who were unburdened by the legacy of last season, you know? And so felt comfortable getting a little freewheeling with it. They didn't have a lot of opportunities to do that. They still felt contained, and it still felt messy because this is ultimately a team sport, goddammit. But it made me optimistic for it. I felt like I could appreciate a high ceiling on, frankly, both of those players' contributions, and the fact that they were able to identify, or that I was able to identify those things, feels like maybe there's room in the operations for that to be a more consistent and more productive relationship and presence. What about you?
Yeah. I a few things from that. Like Wolf, absolutely. I think he works really well in tight space. You can see just the difference of experience. He's barely played in a year and a half, and he still looked more seasoned than a lot of the young players we have because he's got like 5 years of big time clubs, you know, under practice under his belt. He's played for big clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he's young and even though he is rusty, he at least you know, showed pedigree, and I liked it. I actually was, you know, it was surprising to see Wolf start this. I guess it, in retrospect, it wasn't surprising, but in the moment I was very surprised to not see Talos Magno on the field. But we saw how much Nick Cushing loved Hannes Wolf. We have heard how much he loves him, and frankly I get it now. I know what he sees. You can see what Nick Cushing sees in Hannes Wolf, and you understand why he got the start. I would say with Jovan, obviously not nearly enough touches or any time to get anything going, but no. I think you're right. His first 30 seconds on the pitch, he like immediately started running towards the goal whenever we had possession, and I was like, I love it. Like that dynamism, like downhill. I'm going to say that a lot when we talk about St. Louis because like you got to be downhill sometimes to make something happen, and he seems like a very downhill player. Thunder thighs. And also, it was hard to like really delineate what position he was playing. He was playing next to Bakrar, but was wide sometimes, closer others. It was a kitchen sink, you know, end of game shit, so I'm not going to read too much into that. But on the other hand, I think Bakrar, obviously, we would have liked a goal, but on the other hand, he did continue what he had in the preseason, where two of our chances came from him you know, pressing and forcing a turnover. And, like, good that we didn't get that last year. So that's promising, too. I'm really curious to see how this fight goes. But I'd probably like a little more time with Jovan on the field, even if it's together with Barkar. Just put him on the field a little bit more. Let's see a little. Obviously, I get it. This match, he had, what, one practice?
Yeah.
Maybe. But I'm excited for the future with him and Wolf as well. And as you said, when you talked about unburdened by last season, I would say for the most part, the body language and, you know, was much better than last year in this match. At least, like, people didn't scream at each other all the time. That was nice. Of course, when Tavon came on, Santi is, like, allergic to not yelling at Tavon. I find that very funny. It's very cute. But outside of that, I wouldn't say there was any huge animosity among the players. I think they might have been as shell-shocked by the match as we were as viewers. Who was your man of the match? I think there's only one answer for NYCFC.
Freeze, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
obviously.
It has to be. I mean,
yep.
I think my favorite part of the match was the two Vargas denials. The penalty. Jesus Christ. Yeah, we'd be having an entirely different conversation if that penalty went in. Or not an entirely different conversation, but certainly a much more... we'd be pulling ourselves out of a much deeper hole if it had, which it had every right to. It's an amazing stop. It wasn't an amazing penalty, but still, it's hard to stop a penalty no matter how bad it is. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's excellent, excellent work. And 10 minutes earlier, I was like, Priest isn't looking spectacular. But that, you know, it whitewashed my entire experience of him. And then not long after, Vargas came in from the right, and Freeze put a stopper on him there as well. Great fucking instincts. Great positioning, right? Like, great knowing how to pull the trigger as a keeper. It was very heartening. It made me feel like, okay, this is, for the first time in a while, the sort of, like, undeniability of his starter status.
Yeah, we got a good one. We got a good one, folks.
Mm-hmm. The end. Can you speak from the goalkeeper's perspective any more on what Maddie's doing right?
Not really. I mean, it's just his excellent reflexes and I mean even the goal, that would have been extremely hard for him to stop, and he might have gotten a finger on it. Honestly, he might have saved it. I want to see it again, but he might have saved that first goal, the first shot. So even when put in the worst situation, he still made it work, but I love it. Yeah, I think it's great. I want to see him take more. Let's monitor kind of his leadership and ability to control the field as the game, you know, as the season goes on. Because I was watching Sean Johnson today, and there's just things. I know he had an off year last year, and according to some of our listeners, he's a traitor. I don't know. But he... It's those things where, like, the controlling the tempo of the match, right? That's something Sean was so good at. Like, that obviously that famous Thiago Andrade goal against DC United 2 years ago, like, Sean's ability to throw that ball comes from his internal clock of him always being like, we're losing, we have to score, or we're tied, we have to score. Then he knows he has to move faster. And then when it's the end of the match, like, Toronto's like, they're against Cincinnati and it's 0-0. Sean Johnson's like, I'm just going to take my sweet ass time with every little thing I do for the rest of the match. The last 30 minutes, he was taking his time. And it slowed down the game and it slowed down how fast Cincinnati was moving. Because you can't, if you want to move fast, if you want to play fast, you can't go from 0 to 60. You can't just make 11 people instantly, mentally and physically, move faster. It takes time. That's why momentum in soccer is so evident. And I think a goalkeeper has a lot to do with that. So I want to see Freese kind of understand, hey, I'm one of the better players on this team, frankly, and I don't want to be bad again. So let's, you know, either move the tempo, set the tempo, be aware that he can set the tempo. I want to see more of that. That's what you see in older goalkeepers.
Yeah. But it's hard. It's hard to step into it. It's hard to take that role. You know, with Verve, maybe it'll be a little bit easier because of the average age of this team, you know, Maybe it'll be easier for him to, like, once he's comfortable with the natural leadership role that he's positioned in, maybe he can ride that a little bit more and carry that momentum forward.
So let's, just to finish on a little bit more of a positive. Because I know people might, because, look, mentally, I know immediately after, I was in the same headspace of, like, fuck this, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But Jamin Moore, a.k.a. I think that's how you pronounce his last name, his first name, a.k.a. Jay Moore Quakes, as I always call him. He's been in this league for a long time. He runs the Earthquakes, San Jose Earthquakes podcast, and he's been doing this a long time, and he's seen a lot. And I trust him. I trust his soccer knowledge. And this is what he said yesterday. This is your MLS season game one results reminder that home teams will look good today, except Austin, and away teams will look bad. And between weeks 2 and 4, all the narratives will have flipped as the other teams play at home because MLS. Yeah, all the teams playing on the road the first 2 weeks are going to be playing at home right after. And every single year, the road teams suck. Every single year. This year, even more so. I believe right now, LA Galaxy's beating Miami. As we speak, I think it's right now going to be 8-1-7 home record. Only Austin will have lost unless Miami pulls a miracle. And two of those 7 draws were today were teams coming off of CONCACAF Champions League now playing a home match, with tired bodies and half a starting 11. So, and they drew. So, you could argue, like you know, 60 to 70% of the home teams, you know, would have won or won this year, this weekend. So it's just, we are not the only ones in this boat. You know, we are not the only ones to get shell shocked. We are not the only ones to think we had a chance on the road and to come up short. I would say the only pushback I would give myself is that this was Charlotte. This was not a Cincinnati or something else. This was felt like going into it a game we could have at least taken something from. And there was moments in the match where you thought we absolutely could have pulled out a draw here. But it's still week one, guys. I know it feels like last season. It's still just week one. It's just week one. We're not going to remember week two. A lot of people remember the openers, but you're not going to remember next week's game at the end of the season, I promise you. And, you know, looking at it, that might be a good thing.
I do have a talking point, Trey. Do you want to jump into them?
Oh, okay. Let's do it quick, yeah.
All right, here's the song.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
That was the song. My talking point is this: the Gabe Siegel goal the Gabe Siegel goal for Houston that have made the rounds across MLS Twitter this weekend. If you haven't seen it yet, look it up immediately. No secret that we've made a fun pastime of talking about Gabe Siegel across this podcast, and I'm frankly delighted and also butthurt that we have continued reason to talk about his legacy. It also and there is something specific here, which is, like, I mean, that's a beautiful goal. It's beautiful placement. It does feel damning. I know it's just one data point, and that we are the tactical podcast. We're not the vibes podcast, and so we cannot base it entirely on this one data point. But how frustrating is it? If I was a good data journalist, I would go back and find out how long it took, failed experiments in the striker position to get their first goal with another team once we'd traded them away. And I have the totally unscientific feeling that it would be a remarkably short amount of time each time.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, it's fun. It certainly feels spiritual, right? It certainly feels like some kind of weird psychokinetic energy was flying through the air that had our game go that way and Gabraham Siegelman's game go that way. Sure, I get that threat. Someone pointed out to me, the same thing happened with Eber last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. The same thing did happen. He started the season off being one of the leaders in goals and expected goals in the league. And guess what happened after that, Drake? He stunk up the joint and tore his ACL, and now he's a free agent. So, did he even tear his ACL? Maybe I'm making that up. He might just have
just be acting like he did.
But right now he's he tore his ACL with us. Yeah, I don't think he tore his ACL. He got injured and stuff. It just. What I'm saying is, that's cute, but again, week one. Now, for Gabraham's sake, I hope he scores every week. I would love to see that. But, you know,
it's but weird. I'm thinking, it's, you know, all weird. The way back to John Lewis. You know, I'm thinking about, my memory is failing me, but I feel like Kyrie Shelton had a surprising run of form.
Yeah, again, and look. Look what happened to Ebert. Look what happened to Kyrie, who literally may have been the worst player in MLS last year, you know, or 2 years ago, certainly, and has now played like every position on the field just to try to get minutes. And Jonathan Lewis, who, yeah, when he was playing on Island of Misfit Toys, Colorado, of course he looked better and like he was having fun because he was that whole team was just doing whatever they wanted, and sometimes it worked. So now he's not as much. I did read one MLS analyst pick Jonathan Lewis as a dark horse for most improved player. I'm like, okay, sure. I love the guy, but we'll see what happens.
It is a beautiful goal, though. It's really, it's highly aesthetic.
And a team goal.
A World Cup quality goal. Yeah, for real.
And if Gabe has only one, literally only demonstrated one thing while he was here, and that was clutch goal scoring.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill. Hey, that's a skill.
Yeah, tell. There's players. No one who watched our show or no one who watched our match this weekend would say that clutch goal scoring is not a skill.
Exactly. Also, our show. Yeah.
Our show.
You're in theater brain mode.
I can't help myself, my friend. It's been constant. Hey, come see my show, everybody. We plugged it last time. I'm not going to plug it this time, but you should still come see it. You'll see me promoting it on Twitter. That's all I got. You got any talking points? Oh, we should talk about the uniforms. I've come around on the uniforms. They're pretty dope.
Yeah, look great, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
fuck. I was going to do a bit. I totally forgot it because I don't write anything down. Where I was going to do a bit where I was going to... Jake, what are you talking about? We look really good against Charlotte. We looked amazing.
The dark kits are
everyone
cool.
For 5 minutes.
They're dope, but they're not dark kits like Cobra Kai. You know what I mean? They're not dark kits that some teams that go the dark direction. It's like, oh, and now it's Dark Brandon time, right? Like it's we're entering the Negaverse. It's Bizarro Superman. They're the evil team now. And it's not that. And I think what you get out of that is a kind of what I referred to as a laser tag aesthetic.
Laser tag, definitely. But yeah. I like laser tag.
Who doesn't? Better laser tag than paintball. You know? But at least we're not doing the sort of the military fatigues thing anymore. Yeah, I think they're dope. I think it's cool. I think we look good on the field. In at least one way. Will you get one? Will you get a kit?
Probably
jersey.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll see how I feel about this season.
Yeah, fairly so. I also feel like it's a little bit of a to make your starting kit, your first option a totally different color than it's been for the last over the course of the decade is a good way to force a whole at least supporters section to get brand new tops so that their color
true.
Matched to the I can't get away with my 2016 jersey anymore if I'm going to go stand with the fans.
Fair point. Marketing.
Boy, oh boy, it's late, Trey. Let's pivot to a precap. Let's do it. Guys, listen, we're here. You can't hold it against us. We're putting out content for you, for your ears alone. What's the first thing that you think of when you think of, like, what they're going to go home and do? Because
we're going to lose. Oh, wait, what?
Well, we're not at home yet. But, right? We aren't at home. We're still on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're at St. Louis. And we're going to lose.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. No, continue.
No, that's all. That's all I wanted to know. I wanted to know, are we going to lose? No, I meant, you know, when you go home to train, when you say, all right, fuckers, what do you try to piece back together in anticipation of St. Louis?
What do you do?
Jesus, that's what I thought we were trying to keep it positive.
No. But for this specific question, it's like, what conversation now is different than any conversation Nick Cushing has attempted to have in the last year? Like, what gets their goats this time?
You're not hearing anything from the press conferences or any, you know, like nothing. There's nothing burbling that you think is going to be a successful consolidation of form.
Actually, you're right. We can be a little positive because the overwhelming sense from every player coming into the season and the coaches was like, no, this is a new year. It's a new opportunity to show ourselves and to show who we really are. And we're adapting a new system and we have all these new players and it's going to be like a new leaf and we're going to take it on. So if it's that universal and that unanimous, you would expect that after a game like that one, it wouldn't lend itself, that opinion, to changing to, oh, we stink. Oh, I'm not going to try. I'm just here for New York and the money, not for the team. Like, you would assume that's not the first logical jump. You would have to hope that the team goes into practice this week and goes like, well, fuck, man, that was our chance. Like, now we have to do it this game. Like, now we have to show what we can do. Now we have to look as good as we feel. That would be my positive spin on where mentally this team could go for this match. Obviously, I'm not hyper-optimistic because St. Louis is a good team. Like, they are. They're much better than Charlotte, I'll say that.
In what ways? What should we expect from St. Louis? Who we haven't played since February of last year.
And I don't remember that game. This is what I'll say. I'm checking right now to see if they have a CCL game. Do you know who they had at their... You probably don't know this person. One of my favorite musical
artists.
They do.
They do have a CCL game on Tuesday.
Oh, thank fucking God. Oh, my God.
We against have a Houston.
We have a chance. Oh, thank fuck. And they're traveling for it, too. Oh, they had St. Louis open their match with Smino. You know Smino?
Yeah, but I don't listen to him.
I think you'd like him. Cool. Indie hip hop, like.
Yeah, I feel like really you recommended talented. Him Unique. Ages ago. That's fun. That's cool.
Yeah. Idiosyncratic kind of sound. He's a cool guy from St. Louis. Sorry,
St. Louis is a cool city. People don't know.
Yeah, people don't know. And they have a big
soccer stadium right in the
middle
of it. I got very anxious when we went up the arch. People don't know that you can go up the arch. You can. It's scary. It sucks. I hate it.
Yeah, I would too. I would love to go. I probably won't. Just going to be honest. I don't know when I'm going to be in St. Louis next. People have told me to go to that stadium and that it's cool. So maybe I should. But
I believe it. It's fun. They do fried, deep fried ravioli. Can't recommend it enough. God. It's like gourmet Hot Pockets.
Italy will never give me a passport if I eat that. Wait, what was I? Oh my God. Sorry, man. I'm losing steam. We'll get there. Okay, what to expect from St. Louis. Correct. Yeah, I distracted myself. Here's the deal. Like, super direct, super well-balanced, really well, I mean, certainly in last year, like, well, solid defensively with the best goalkeeper in the league, and just were able to create chances over and over again. Super fluid. You know, they counter-press really well. And unfortunately for us, guess what? One of their biggest strengths was last year.
What?
Set pieces.
I should have guessed. Should have taken the chance.
So that sucks. And their home environment is fantastic. One thing that kind of, obviously they went out to the strong start last year. Slowed down a little bit at the end of the year, certainly. But one of the things that left was like real clear goal scoring threats. Like they have Klaus, obviously, but or Kraus, what's his name? Oh my god. It's late. So they lost Joe Akini. Joe Akini was like a nice second striker option for them. He wasn't the best on St. Louis, but he was nice depth. Klaus is the guy. So they really only depend on Klaus, and Klaus last year was pretty streaky. So you have to hope he's in a bad streak, not a good one. He didn't necessarily get anything going. They looked not great against RSL, but it was because they were coming off CCL. I watched a lot of that match. And RSL, who looked awful against Miami, they looked good in moments against St. Louis, because what they did was they were downhill. Their best chances the whole match came from going over the top and having Chicho Arango try to outrun someone, or one-touch passing extremely vertical. That's where their goal came from. 4 one-touch passes from the right back, ping-ping, boom, right to Arango. And it was a fantastic team goal. And like that's the only way. The only way to beat St. Louis is to surprise them, is to judo flip their own momentum against them. And obviously, that's not something we did. Like, this is not a good matchup for us. But Parker went down during that match. Their elder statesman, center back, defensive player of the year nominee. He went down last game. I don't know how healthy he'll be. I don't know if he'll play next weekend. Also, what we have going for us is that they're playing CCL, as you so kindly informed us. So, yeah, I did think we're going to lose, and I probably still do think we're going to lose, but the game's certainly there. Seeing the NYCFC we saw against Charlotte would absolutely lose this match. Seeing an NYCFC that we were promised and that we saw glimpses of in preseason and that we saw for 20 minutes at the end of the first half, we got a chance to certainly tie this game. And trust me, a tie in this match would be huge. It would be nice.
Will you go so far as to predict it?
No, I'm going to predict a 2. I want this team, I want the vibes and mojo to earn its way back to me. Also, I think I'm a bad influence. So I'm going to say, no, we're going to lose 1-0 again.
Yeah, I'll co-sign that immediately. That's the
fuck.
It's really hard to imagine not losing by 1.
My new mentality now is just clench your teeth and bear it until the home opener. Like, I just try to get there.
I think that's fair.
Now
I
that
also
the first game's over,
if we lose 2-1, I'll call it a victory. If we get a goal on the sheets,
that's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, if we just crack that cold one open, I'll be thrilled. I'll go home happy.
That's fair.
Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod. You know it, you love it. We got some merch buys this week, Trey. People really appreciated our appeal to them. But it's not too late. There's still some in stock for you if you want to jump into the link on that Twitter account and pick up a coffee mug or a brand new t-shirt. It's season 10, baby. It's time to rep who you've been listening to since the beginning. Show everyone
that
you
link
are the
down
real
so
shit.
You can actually plug it next time.
Oh my god. All right, it's link, it's fucking, it's linktr.ee/blueballspod. Just go to that. You want the merch specifically? It's blueballs.myspreadshop.com.
That's the
you
one. That's
whiny one. Child.
Also, great move by us to put merch sightings in the wild in our over-unders, so now people can influence their own bets by buying merch.
Hell yeah, that's exactly right. Man, this logo's so good. This shit looks so good on a t-shirt. It looks great on a... I sleep in a sleeveless tee, an oversized sleeveless tee. The material's so soft. I can't, all right, this is boring. I'm not gonna keep on shilling for it, but you won't regret it, I promise. But what you will regret is not tuning into next week when we cover everything that there is to cover about St. Louis and that matchup where we most certainly will get a goal. Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you then. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Deuces.